Log Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
I'm on the stage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, the news.
20 minutes, dead or alive, on the news, right now.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
They kind of missed the whole point.
To really tap into have a serial time
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now, on to our show.
Hi, thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, or Beast Zeno. This is my co-host, Dark Fool. Matt, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing well, man. I was up, a few hours last night editing, getting some promotion work done, but everything is built to satisfaction. I'm here, I got my coffee, and I'm ready to rock this shit.
Rock and roll, man. You did a really excellent job on that video. Anybody listening may want to go to your YouTube channel and take a quick... It's only like a minute and 55 seconds, but it's got to be, I don't know, the best minute and 55 seconds I've seen in a long time. So, anyway...
I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. What the hell was I going to say? That intro. Man, I just love that new intro. I love it. Every time I listen to it, it gets a little bit better.
Dude. I think the intro is a good theme. It definitely brings out, when I listen to it, I definitely hear you and Jason Sorrell in there, Eagle Diabolus.
Right on. Right. That's pretty cool. On a more serious note, I guess we should kind of begin to try to touch on this topic. Today, I think I'm going to have a little bit of difficulty describing to everybody exactly what it is that I'm wanting to express. I don't want to come across like I'm somehow standing on my soapbox or, looking over a pulpit, but there's just some things I sort of think that everybody really needs to have a good grasp of it, whether you're a Satanist or a Christian or whatever. I mean, there are some... what I would think, common things that everybody has to do, and that's sort of have a mature mindset. Let me see if I can explain this in this way. It doesn't take much to look out the window and realize that the world as it is in its natural state is adversarial. I guess the best way that I've heard it put so far was Jason King, what he said on the Postmodern Satanism edition of The Ooze sometime back in, I think it was April. I think the show was April 10th or something like that. And he says he views the current, the adversarial current, as a boss. And what he means by this is that it is the most pressing current to it. It's the one that is most present, it's most dealt with, it's most interacted with. It's not the boss of bosses, but it is our boss. And because it's our boss, we are subject to certain rules with it. Now, what that means in my mind is that reality is a hostile place, that it's a dog-eat-dog world. Every day that you wake up, you take a chance at, not taking that next breath. You never know when a plane drop out of the sky. I mean, it's all factored by probability, but ultimately the reality of things is that all things are possible at all times. So... it just becomes a matter of it being determined by factorability. So when you're in a hostile environment, it's natural that you take up kind of I don't want to say exactly militant, but a disciplined lifestyle. Having good control over yourself. You know, the other way I guess you could kind of look at this is, you know, a Satanist is someone who does not serve, you know, the one God or doesn't serve a God. I mean, it really depends on which perspective you're spinning it from. But regardless, he doesn't have a master. Instead, the Satanist's master is himself. But I think this is true with humans in general. Humans need to realize that they are responsible for themselves. And I think this is really, you know, kind of what we're building into is you need to have a system of ethics. And it doesn't matter if it's based on popular morality, so long as that popular morality is governed by you, so long as you select and choose what things will influence you and what things you'll do to influence the zeitgeist. Matt, I'm kind of going long-winded here, man, but if I'm missing...
All right. There's my cue. Can't get more direct than that. Well, I mean, I just want to start with what you stated in the description of the show. We toss around the terms like responsibility to the responsible and Satan demands study, not worship, but why? What is the importance of it? You know, and what you were bringing up, what you were discussing about self-mastery, I believe that is the importance of it. It's, you know, we look to things that inspire us, and we look to things, you know, that translate into that world, that adversarial world. I mean, that's the difference between when we quote, you know, responsibility to the responsible, which is obviously a satanic statement. You know, we look at that and we see how that relates. Unlike our opposition, unlike Christianity, where they will just take a verse and then try to make the world fit into that verse, we try to see how that verse fits into the world. And sometimes rules need to be bent, sometimes they need to be broken. But ultimately, these guidelines are here to try to help you to think for yourself.
Right, right. I mean, let's all just be frank and real for a minute. You know, if you were walking, you know, in a nearby jungle and you came across the tiger, the very first thing that you're definitely going to do is not fuck with it, right?
Right.
Right. So I guess what I'm saying is that at some point there becomes this sense of realizing that there are things that can hurt you. And, you know, that is necessarily... you should back down if it was to come at you, but, you know, disturbing it is just kind of foolishness. It's not a self-preserving idea. So I'm kind of getting at the fact that, you know, that's one type of realistic self-governing principle that you might enlist is that, you know, you're not going to... you know, you're gonna trend lightly when in open territory, you know.
Right, right, and it all comes down to translation. You know, I've seen how these things translate. Sometimes they may fit, and sometimes they won't. One example I was thinking of for today's show was there was a satanic sin or a satanic sin. I forget which one. Or no, it was one of the rules of the earth. That's right. And it was, you know, do not harm children. Do not harm little children. Well. The way we translate children in the United States, at least, is like, you know, between infancy and up to the age of 16, where they're a minor, you know? And then you think cases where minors, such as Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, are opening fire in a public school, and it's like, if you had the opportunity, if you had a gun to stop them from doing that and you had to kill them, you know, that's obviously a rule that had to be broken.
Right. And I think that's important to outline here is that, you know, you're not trying to form any hard dogma. Rather, you just have a system.
Exactly.
You have a system of principles set in your mind, and you try to meet the obligation of those principles based on the priority of them. Self-preservation, obviously, would be held above, you know, do not harm children in that particular case.
Exactly. And returning to one of the statements that you originally put in there, responsibility to the responsible, you know, self-governing, self-mastery.
everything has to be tempered equally. I mean, it's been said before, I believe it was in postmodern Satanism. It's been mentioned elsewhere, but Satanism as the concept of evolution. Now, with evolution comes balance. You know, you have to have some things. If anything, if any one element is thrown out of balance, then the whole thing gets messed up. You know, for example, responsibility to the responsible. You know, if somebody who works too hard doesn't have enough fun is obviously not going to be as effective, an effective master of their own life, because they're going to miss out on some of the important things of life, and they're not going to be taken as seriously that way. And right. On the other hand, if they party too much and they don't take responsibility, then, you know, it hinders them as well. And it doesn't make them an effective master, doesn't make them an effective magus, sorcerer, whatever you want to call it.
Right. Something I'd maybe like to clear up a little bit with what you were saying there, because I think that what you were expressing is the same thing that I feel, but it just maybe sounded a slight bit off there. You were talking about balance in keeping yourself healthy and whatever, you know, keeping a fine home by balancing things and not having too much of one and not enough of another.
Exactly.
The thing that kind of strikes me here is that balance oftentimes leads in your mind to the picture symbol of a old school scale with the two plates of gold, you know, gold on one side, wheat on the other, or whatever. And it's kind of a mental demonstration of duality, so to speak, or duality.
Okay.
But the thing of it is that balance in life maintains many scales. It's not just two scales. Things, even though they have a two-dimensional appearance, aren't really ever two-dimensional. There is always an intersecting pole, if I could say that, or intersecting line on the graph, so to speak. So when we talk about balance, it's necessary to understand that that doesn't mean you go out and do a good deed and then go out and do a bad deed, and that's your balance. What we mean, rather, is that you judge from the moment based on what will lead to the most possible best outcome.
Right.
So I just kind of wanted to clear that up, because
that's good. I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of times when we bring up examples, it's comparing one against another. It's good to have like a third dimension to that, to realize that there are much more possibilities. I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, in old school, what I would consider old school way of thinking is, you know, like the most obvious one, good and evil. You know, it's like there are a lot more factors. And, you know, the term good and the term evil have to be clearly defined. And, you know, what may be good for one person may be bad for another, and then may be beneficial or neutral to something else. You know, these are all possibilities that must be weighed in, and I agree with that. But in the context of explaining, I brought up, you know, that's the easiest way to reach an audience, so to speak, is to compare one thing with another thing.
Right. Well, I agree with that, but, you know, you have to give your audience a little bit of credit and give them that third dimension, that fourth dimension as well. You know, every decision a person makes, in my mind, should be a fully informed decision, at least as informed as is possible, you know.
Well, see, that's why it's good to look outside of yourself. That's why it's good to see how other people view things, because then you could get a perspective that you yourself were not aware of, and that could actually help further you if you know how to apply it.
Right, and I think the key here is that this is stuff that you have to do for yourself, if that makes sense. You know, you aren't conducting yourself in a specific manner for everybody else. You're conducting yourself in a specific manner because it yields the best possible results for you. So I think it's kind of cool that in a lot of ways we have a lot of primal earthly ideas in Satanism. You know, the idea of living your life. I don't think there's anything supernatural or, I don't know, overly fantastic about it, yet it happens to be probably the most fantastic idea there is. You know, live life. Live it to its fullest. Enjoy every moment of it because you don't know. You know, that's the long and short of it. You can speculate all day long and you can even be convinced. But just because you're convinced that there's a other side doesn't mean that when that day comes, that's definitely what you're getting. I mean, you're kind of in Schrodinger's cat at the moment, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I just, I don't know, it's something I feel passionately about. I always try to govern myself in a manner that I think is the most productive for me. I'm consistent most of the time about things. I suppose on somewhat of an interpersonal level, I can sometimes be inconsistent, but, you know, I'm not perfect at any stretch either. I try to keep it consistent, you know?
Right. Well, we're all human, you know? We're all going to make our own mistakes. We all have personal flaws, and that's another thing to weigh in. You know, if you want to take a look at, like, a second two-dimensional or even three- or four-dimensional scale, we all have individual struggles. Like, some people's individual struggle may be, like, they eat too much. They have too much food. They overindulge in that area. Or some may be that they overindulge, you know, little horse they are. They overindulge in sex, you know, and that's their personal struggle. So everybody's, that's where I think, you know, when we come up to a conclusion, when we, for ourselves, that might be where some of the conflict comes in, where we have an idea of the way the world is in our mind, and then the way the world is in somebody else's mind based on our different struggles. They could clash because they are all, you know, different individuals, and that individuality in and of itself is clashing.
Right on. Right on, man. Well, I mean, this is just such an interesting topic because to me it seems like such a common sense, shouldn't even be something that's being discussed in correlation with Satanism. It should just be a default mechanism. But
and
then
yet.
What's that?
Exactly. And yet, you know, and it's so complex because of there's so many factors involved that, you know.
Right. I mean, it's certainly difficult to build a world model. You know, by world model, I mean your viewpoint of the world, you know?
You know, I think there is a good determining factor here, though. Based on success, you know, how success that brings in the practitioner. I mean, if you look at how well it worked for them, it may work well for you, and in which case, you have to go back to the adversarial conflict and test it out for yourself. Otherwise, you will never know.
Right on. Right on. I agree. I agree with you. One second, all right?
Right.
All right, so apparently today's show topic is not of the greatest interest or something. Either that or people were partying way too late last night. I know Bourne fucking passed out and kissed his coffee table pretty good. His face was fucked up. Yeah, I mean,
I shouldn't be laughing, but that's, you know, I'm sorry. Things like that are funny to me. I've got a sick sense of humor.
Yeah, that's a little twisted, but, I mean, he chuckled about it, too, after it happened. It is what it is, man. One of the things I really dig about Bourne is that he's one of these type of people that I'm trying to describe and talk about. Bourne is very good at being in control of himself. There's no doubt in my mind that Bourne's ideas are Bourne's and Bourne's alone. Bourne behaves in a manner that Bourne believes is beneficial to him. It's a business transaction at all times. The investments and whatever's being exchanged, though, are different and happen at different levels. So by this, what I mean is that he would still behave like he was in a relationship in a relationship, but he would treat it in such that he would protect his interest within that relationship. So.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, it's funny. The other thing I would like to bring up, comparing one thing to another, and if you have any more to add, feel free, is that in Satanism, you know, in LaVey Satanism in particular, they talk about, you know, if your enemy strikes you on the cheek, smash him on the other, and indulgence instead of abstinence, but not compulsion. And, you know, on the one hand, you have this brutal side, and then on the other hand, it says, you know, LaVey even says, but Satan has always remained the gentleman and kept quiet. You know, right. So, I mean, there's another thing to consider. And I think Bourne lives up to that, you know, giving Matt props, is that there's that side that's professional, and that's actually one thing I wanted to touch on is professionalism within Satanism. You know, it's like you can have your partying and you can have your fun, but then there's the professional side in which, you know, I mean, like, it needs to take care of business.
Right on. No doubt, I absolutely agree with that, man. I mean, Bourne's not only a good example, Jason Sorrell's an excellent example. Jason King is a prime example as well, and also he's a good example of how you can still differ in, you know, what you think is right and accomplish your means and still live by a standard. Jason King truly is the bad guy at points and times, and he's comfortable in that role.
Exactly. And part of that is because, you know, seeing the world as adversarial, working with that nature and rather than against it, and realizing you're not going to please everyone.
Right. So, I mean, these are just, you know, things that I think are earmarks for anybody who's truly self-actualized. You know, and I really think that that's what Satanism at its heart is trying to get to, is self-actualization. I mean, when it all breaks down to it, the idea is not to be enslaved by anything, and that includes influences and ideas, you know, so.
Or impulses, you know, a lot of times, well, some of the things I've seen recently, I'm not going to bring up any examples, but what I've seen recently within the left-hand path, and I'm no exception to this. I myself have fallen into this, is that, you know, when people get anger is the easiest thing to act upon. You know, anger and reaction, and, you know, you let that get to you without taking a step back and realizing how it can benefit you and how it might not benefit you. You know,
right.
You know, emotional reaction can hinder. It can help at times, but it can also hinder.
Right. I mean, I myself have gone so far as to study Sun Tzu's Art of War for insight in how to handle myself when I'm interchanging in a more public venue. I've taken the time to list out a kind of a set of priorities that ultimately I believe give me a really good escaping as to determining what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. I have a little formula. I say it's cost versus necessity over benefit. So what I mean by that is that you take, you know, whatever it is that you're considering, whatever it is that you're going to be doing, and you think to yourself, you know, what consequences are born with this? And then you look at those consequences and you think to yourself, okay, now what am I getting out of this? Is the juice worth the squeeze? And so you look at that and you figure out, okay, well, first of all, is this something I really need? If it's something you really need, that obviously sways the scale to a much higher, you know, bit there. And then after that, is it something I'd really like? And if it's high there too, then you understand that it's a full benefit. So it gives you kind of a formula for how to govern yourself. You know, you think to yourself, okay, this dude just grabbed my beer. If I don't say anything to him, what's going to happen? If I say something to him, what's going to happen? And you keep breaking it down like that, you know, and you're cautious that way. You never make a move that's uncalculated. You become almost indestructible because you don't choose to put yourself in a situation where you can, you know, be blindsided by something you didn't expect. You're informed about, you know, what the possibilities are.
You know what? That's it. Show's over. You nailed it right there. We can all go home now.
I didn't hit it that hard, man.
Well, no, that is an excellent formula, and I think, I encourage the listeners. I mean, this is that's definitely something to take home and consider, right? You know, let that absorb that for a little bit. You know, roll that around.
Right, and if you just govern everything that you do like that, the world becomes your oyster. You know, it really.
You know, that's the thing too, is that formulas like that and the way you govern yourself, a lot of times, you know, it may be hard at first. That's another process that needs examining, is that at first, you know, taking that first step is hard, but once it becomes like second nature, then, you know, you're rolling.
Right on. Well, this is kind of how I prioritize things. My first priority is to live. I know this. My very next priority is to observe myself and the world around me. After that, I know myself and the world around me. I watch it, I learn it, I study it, I interact with it, and I experience it. And then from there, you know, you build to the things that you most love, and you build to new things. And I guess I just kind of, I see it in this real natural progression of curiosity, interaction, discovery, and then gnosis. So I think, I think that the first thing to do is just to construct, you know, how it is that you interact with the external stimuli, or what would be referred to as qualia.
Okay.
So,
Speaking of external stimuli, I hate to cut you off on this one, but how are we doing on guests in the chat room? How are we doing on phone calls?
There are three people in the chat room, and switchboard's empty, man. It's a slow day. Today's been kind of weird, though. I mean, let me tell you that I travel every Saturday about 300 miles to pick up my son and bring him home. Normally there are some moderate cars on the road, but today it was almost like we were jumping in and out of swarms the whole way. So it seems to be today's some day of importance somewhere or something.
President's Day weekend. Some people have 3 days off.
Right. So I didn't expect a real big turnout, man. I think the topic's robust enough that we should be fine.
Okay.
Know? Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of circling everything that we're talking about back to, you know, basic concepts. You know, one of the things you can do when you're first starting to govern yourself is look in other places for wisdoms, you know, like the old Confucius wisdoms and stuff like that. You know, you examine those things and you find some truths in those. I think this is why people are often drawn to things of the religious nature is because they hold these little idioms in them. At least I think that's the word that I want to use. What I mean is, like, for instance, a fortune cookie I opened a few years ago said, common sense is instinct, but enough of it is genius. And it just rang completely true to me. You know, I could measure.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Right. Yeah, you have enough common sense that you understand something entirely. I mean, well, that's really what common sense is, right? It's a common understanding.
Right, and in a way that illustrates, like, once common sense, it illustrates in its simplicity how common sense can evolve into something greater.
Yeah.
You know, another example I can think of right off the bat is the seventh satanic statement, you know, like, man is just another animal, sometimes better, more often worse than those that walk on all fours, who, because of his divine intellectual and spiritual development, has become the most vicious animal of all.
Right on. Right on, man. I am... Go ahead. Please.
The other thing that I want to go back to is that you have to work with models that work for you, like we said before, and you can't, you know, I mean, it's best not to try to solidify it into one giant, like philosophy for all to absorb, because not everybody's going to absorb it. And I think that's where a lot of our oppositions fail. You know, and it's good to look at them as a model of what not to do. You know, like, instead of getting, you know, theories to support facts, you know, you get facts to support theories, and everything gets mixed up. You know, like, for example, somebody that quotes a nice, you know, quote from, like, Leviticus or Deuteronomy or something that may sound nice but doesn't translate well. You know, I think that's definitely worth examining on what not to do.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, that just shows being a good student, in my opinion. You know, definitely making sure that the facts fit rather than the fit facts or whatever you just said. I mean, I understand the context of what you meant by it, but, that's just laziness in a way. You know, if you're not willing to sit and do the hard math, so to speak.
Yep.
You know, you run into a little problem. And that problem is that somebody like Dan Dredd's going to call you out. And they're going to call you out big time. You know, that's really what the trouble that you run into is when you act like a fool, you get treated like one. No offense, Matt.
None taken.
So, you know, I mean, these are all things to consider. You know, if it was just you in a world without other things to interact with, you could just run around and do whatever you want, and that'd be fucking super. But I guarantee you, if you try to hump that hot lady down the road, her fucking husband's going to kill you.
Darn. Well, there goes my plans for the evening.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there are, of course, variations of that story, but ultimately that is one solid possibility, and the fact that that risk is there at all begs the question of if the activity is worth it, you know?
Right, right.
So,
well,
I mean, go ahead, man.
Yeah, and see, that's also, you know, getting back to the adversarial portion of it, that's also where we see a good portion of adversarial conflict in the world as it stands today, like, you know, in the 21st century. You know, we still have people that hold on to it, and that's another thing. The things that we hold today may not be, you know, that are true today may not be true tomorrow. And a lot of times people want to hold on to what they once knew, even though things have changed to a degree where what they once knew is obsolete.
Right. I suppose that makes good sense, man.
You know, and when it comes to self-mastery, I mean, like, things, you know, Aleister Crowley, you know, I got to give him, a lot of credit in this area. He realized that that religions do have a shelf life. And when what worked yesterday doesn't work today, you know, you have to go through that period of self-discovery again. You have to be willing to adapt to the change, that adversarial change.
Right on. Right on, right on. So, let me see. This is, all right, I guess this brings me back around to what principles do you think most express how you govern yourself? You know, do you have a set of priorities or, you know, maybe a particular formula like I was describing for dealing with the world? I mean...
You know, I admire and respect that formula, and I will take it into consideration. But I myself have just, I just look at specific situations and I based it on, you know, what I know, like any human being, and try to see how the two relate and try to see some sort of a compromise. I mean, there's really no formula that I use. I just, you know, it's a combination of common sense and experience. In my case, I mean, I'm very like that.
Right on. Right on. Sorry.
Yeah, and that's actually, it's funny that we're mentioning that portion, because I, there is a concept that I'm bringing up in my book called anagnorisis, or anach, you know, however they pronounce it, with the guttural. But that's the situation in a play, like such as Oedipus Rex, where they come to a realization of the full nature of things around them. And it took conflict to get to that, you know. Sometimes it took success, and at other times it took error. So, I mean, the whole thing, you know, you're never going to know completely. You're never going to be completely 100% perfect. So, in a sense, it's showing not just stupidity as being painful, as LeVay wished it would be, but it also shows that sometimes, not that it's excusable, but sometimes that stupidity is a necessary step.
Well, that's understandable, definitely. Sometimes, yeah, definitely. I mean, you got to make a mistake to know what's wrong.
Right. Or correct, I should say.
Right, yeah. I mean, you got to do something wrong to figure out what the right way to do it is sometimes. Every once in a while, you might stumble on and get it right. If you have enough to base, you know, an educated guess on, you're more likely to succeed than you just randomly doing something. But, you know, the potential's still there. But it definitely helps to make mistakes, man. You learn that way, for sure. You know, as a matter of fact, I think that's one of the biggest supporters of the concept of reality being adversarial, is that we don't really learn so much by the things that we do right as we do learn from the things that we do wrong. And by right and wrong, I'm not using it in any kind of dogmatic context. I'm talking about having right being achieving desired effects and wrong being not achieving desired effects.
Right, beneficial versus non-beneficial.
Right. So, shit, man. I mean, there's a million ways we could go with this. I'm really not sure what direction I want to go from here. But I'm going to, again, make mention that it is a discussion edition, and there's a call-in number, 347-989-1371. I think a lot of you guys are hanging out there listening because I see guests in the chat room and stuff. Nobody's up in the chat room, which is all fine because whatever. But if you want to call in and give us an idea of how you view self-mastery, whether you think it's a necessity to develop. It's interesting. Have you read any Sun Tzu yet, Matt?
Soon.
Okay.
You know what? Right. Here's something else. Here's another model I work by, and it works for me. It may not work for everybody else. People are going to look at me and go, "You fucking idiot." But you know what? That's how I learned. Like I said, with that last concept I brought up, I kind of see my life as it's. At times, I take the reins. Other times, I follow, but I know when to pick up the reins and when to let go. You know, I've learned that much. I do have Sun Tzu. I have that, the Book of Five Rings by Musashi.
Yeah.
And here's the way. What kicks my ass into gear, because sometimes I do get lazy, is when I'm working on projects like the book that I'm working on now. And there will definitely be some Sun Tzu philosophy, and I will study it at great lengths. Everybody has been telling me, pick up this book and read it, you know, and I need to, and I know that, but it's not at that point yet. It's not at the point where, you know, I will get it, I will read it, and I will apply it. It's just not there yet, but it will be real soon.
Right, well, I'm not going to bust your chops, man. I mean, I understand
that's my point. Leave it to me. I will bust my own. I'm right pretty self-motivated when I can be, but I'm also I can also be pretty fucking lazy.
Right. Well, Sun Tzu proposed a certain, I don't know, worldview, a way to consider things as you're thinking about them. I have myself a little bit of an idea based on what he said of how it can be applied to general psychology. The first thing that he talks about is the principle of harmony. The principle of harmony is it's you know the strength of the common mimetic bond. So it's a common mimetic bond. So it's a shared idea. The first thing that you have to consider is how well shared an idea is. You know, if it's not a very popular view, there's more of a chance that it's a flawed or an inaccurate view. There are a lot of people out there that scrutinize ideas, and that's what we want to, you know, say, in my mind, perpetuates the development of these ideas. So, naturally, the principle of harmony is, you know, it's the balance we were talking about, every factor, every measure, making sure that, you know, the conditions are correct for moving forward into the desired result. So that's the first vectoring that Sun Tzu offers. The second vectoring that Sun Tzu offers is the principle of the elemental, which is it's kind of a direct examination of the macrocosm. You know, the external environmental factors, the things that are going to play into it. You know, is it going to rain? Is it going to snow? Is there a war going on outside? You know, all of these things you have to kind of, you know, vector as well. So I think that's one of the things that he suggested. The next was the terrain. Now, what that is, it's a measure of the distance, difficulty, and danger obtaining your objective. It's just that this is the cost versus necessity over benefit formula that I developed. This is where it takes root. The next thing, the virtue, you have to consider what you know about what you're doing. You know, being prepared. The old thing goes well begun is half done. Mary Poppins said that, and I really believe that's true. Anything that's been properly prepared for is very simple to finish when it's time.
You know, I got to hand it to you, Vince. I love it. I love how you can mix in Sun Tzu with Mary Poppins. I mean, that's just brilliant.
Well, you know, I was actually very lucky with this. My Uncle Steve is kind of a misanthropic who's not like necessarily interested in philosophy, but says some very philosophically complex things. And he's actually the one that broke it down to me with the Mary Poppins thing.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, and that's really quickly, I want to go back. I mean, if you've got more to say, feel free. I won't interrupt you. There are parts of me, like when I get involved in a project, that's when I gather my information. Like, for example, I would have never gotten around to, I know myself well enough, I would have never gotten around to reading The Order of Nine Angles. You know, I would have never gotten around to Principia Discordia if I see how this project relates to all of these things within Let's Empath and within certain schools of mysticism. So, you know, forgive my blindsidedness. There are parts where I am a fool, but I'm doing that to become wiser. And that's kind of the model that I live by that you asked earlier. You know, it's like I'm a kinesthetic learner. That's another way of putting it. Is that I bump my head in order to get it. You know what I mean? And I force myself, you know, forward. And I can take the pain. I can take the punishment because I know that it is getting me to a higher state.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's that concept in itself is something that I think is I want to say almost a a religious notion, but it's not in a negative sense.
Right. I know there was a verse in the Bible that says, you know, be a fool in order to become wise. And back when I was starting with this whole darkful thing, there was an element that was still Christian, and I remember that quite well from those old days. But I've since then moved long past that.
Right, right. The last thing on my list of Sun Tzu's five principles of consideration is the mastery. And what this is an examination of your own ability to master whatever it is that you're engaging into. So his deal is you vector these five factors all together, and you can see a very long picture. Suddenly, everything about it makes sense, and you can see what direction it's going to go. From there, you can actually begin to put other principles that Sun Tzu has listed off as tactics or ways to maneuver. Like Sun Tzu pushes the idea that you don't move unless you have something to gain, that you do nothing unless there's something gained from it. So, that's some pretty heavy stuff right there.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, you've told me time and time again that you live by that part alone. You've mentioned a lot where, you know, you don't make a move unless you know that it's going to benefit. In fact, I want to bring up a conversation that we had a while back. It was when I was, you know, it was the very first episode when I co-hosted this show. And it was, if you'll recall, the Venus Satanis episode where, you know, Jason King called in and ripped her a new one.
Right.
And it was a blessing in disguise, if I may use that metaphor, that idiom, that term, what have you, that I was not, you had meant to put me on the switchboard and to control the calls and to, you know, boot callers. And I got to tell you, right off the bat, man, because I did not see it that way, if Jason King had kept going, I would have booted him. You know, if I were on the switchboard right there, I would have booted him. But, you know, we gained something from that show. Some things were brought to light that was, you know, I was blindsided to at the time. And then once we had that discussion, it was like, oh, okay, that's where we draw the line. That's when it's absolutely gaining nothing for the show, when it's absolutely gaining like nothing but it's just ad hominems, mudslinging that serves no purpose for the use, then, you know, then it has to go.
Right, exactly. I mean, so I suppose this is why ultimately this show was kind of important to me to do. And I want to make mention that Nagashiva is actually in the chat room, and he asked what I think is a very important question. How does one avoid the problem of self-delusion? He came in after we talked about measuring yourself off against the adversarial nature of the world. So I'm trying to think of how to recap everything we covered in a real short excerpt. Can you think of maybe the best way to summarize it?
Well, it has to go through that period of conflict. I mean, there's really no other way around it. You have to test constantly, you know, old ideas, new ideas, and see how it benefits and how it does not benefit. I mean, there's really no 100% answer. And then once you realize how beneficial it is, then obviously that disperses any delusions. Or, you know, but at the same time, when you benefit, think about how, you know, you really have to play a game of chess here. You really do. You have to think about not only is it benefiting me for the moment and will it benefit me in the long term?
Right. Right. I mean, I honestly don't think immediate benefit is nearly as important as long-term benefit. It's, you know, again, going back to that quote that I said was almost religious and not in a bad way.
And also see how it translates. I mean, really quickly, if I may bring up the example of like how recently within real estate there was lending on the market. You know, that benefited in the short term for these brokers, but, you know, in the long term, it fucked our economy.
Right, right. I mean, so these are things that need to be put into consideration prior to enacting on things or participating with things. That, you know, the problem becomes that you don't really know whether or not you're delusional until you butt right up against a problem and realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm delusional right there. And to try to, I don't know, to try to, you know, imagine where you might be delusional prior to actually discovering that point is, I don't know, I don't think that would be maddening. You know, am I wrong? Am I wrong? Am I wrong? Am I wrong? Am I crazy? Am I nuts? I think, you know, delusion is something that you find out after you've met the point of impact, you know? And then, what's that?
I said exactly. And by the way, I want to also point out that one of my methods, too, is that a lot of times when you are rational, you'll notice that you're the one in a world of insane people. You know, it's like what's always right is, what's always right is not necessarily popular, and what's always popular is not necessarily right, or however that quote goes. I know I misquoted it a little bit, but you kind of get the point. You'll notice that the majority is going along with one thing when you're saying, wait a minute. And, you know, I mean, like, you really have to... I lost my train of thought. Excuse me. Finally got left. Yay! I just totally botched the show. Sorry, guys.
There's 8 minutes left, man, and you've been a good trooper on this, so don't worry about it.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, guys. Major brain fart right there. Time for some coffee.
Ultimately, I guess people can do whatever they want, but it is my opinion that if you handle yourself with a certain nobility and you keep this kind of a mindset that I've been describing, you'll benefit the most in reality.
There you go, man.
Yeah. That's my opinion. And nothing more than that. No matter how fucking true it is.
Well, you don't know how true it is until you test it, right?
Right on. Right on, man.
Well, here's another good thing that came to my, you know, just came to mind right now.
Go ahead.
How do you know when, you know, we're talking about self-mastery. How do you know when you can no longer govern, when it's out of your hands and you say, okay, I definitely need help?
Well, I would assume when you begin to try to approach the problem and you can't seem to find any kind of solution, when you've exhausted every potential examination, and then the next thing, I mean, it's just how a mechanic goes at an engine in a car is he says, what's it doing? And he looks at the external behavior of it. No matter how it behaves, it's going to give certain cues, symptoms, if we could say that, that will cue him into things to test and see if that can fix the problem. When you run out of that list, when there's nothing else to check, then you go to another person and you go, am I missing something? It's at that point. It's at the point when you've exhausted everything that you know how to do. That's when
there is a danger in that I might address while we're on the topic of self-mastery. There are a lot of people out there, a lot of things with the right-hand path in particular, I've noticed that want you to believe that there is an inherent problem and that they have the solution, that you keep coming to them. So dependency to another, you know, just transferring that dependency into another vice that benefits somebody else.
Right. Well, I would agree with the fact that there are people out there that would be willing to be false teachers. But common sense says that you still weigh and measure everything. You test everything. So that should be revealed pretty quickly if
right.
They're being truthful or not. So, yeah, I mean, it is a danger, definitely something to consider. Always, you know your enemy. Know yourself first, know your enemy next, and then from there, know everyone you love.
Beautiful.
Okay.
And on that note, we got 5 minutes left, right?
Yeah, 5 minutes left. Nothing to really freaking talk about. So if you got anything you want to put on the table or comment on, that'd be cool. But, I mean, I think the show went well, man.
Same. Maybe a few brief words from Nagasiva if he wants to call in.
We haven't had him on in a while. That's true.
But isn't that... Well, who was in the chat room that asked the question? You said Naga.
Nagasiva, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing I love about Nagasiva is, and there's only 4 minutes left in the show, man, so if he doesn't call in, I would say that's probably wise. You know, he's always got a million questions about it, you know. It, really excellent that he's such an inquirer. Kind of almost reminds me of my four-year-old because his mind's just constantly thirsty with why.
And I've seen him on a couple of forums too, and yeah, just to say a couple of praises. I mean, like, the other way of testing is to ask these questions, obviously. So, I mean, when we put out statements, you know, don't accept it at face value.
Right on, man, right on. Let's see. 3 minutes left. Again, I wanted to make mention your promotional video on your YouTube channel. Check it out. Kicked ass.
Thank you. That's youtube.com/DARKF00L.
Yep, that's it. And, of course, come hang out at Satanic International Network. It is the place to network. You watch Matt's video, and that's the first thing you're really cued into is you get a real visual audio and altogether peripheral understanding of what it really means to network, what the potential of network is. Matt took, you know, our creative efforts, the creative efforts of another, and he put his own creative effort to it and just made something that was absolutely, in my opinion, brilliant. So, very good.
Thanks.
I liked it a lot, yeah.
Well, you know, 99.9% of that came from other sources. That was yours, FearTheBeast.com. That was Ego Diabolus, you know, Creative Oddity Studios, and, of course, where you all are hanging out, Satanic International.
Right on, man. Right on. All right. So with all that being said and done, man, this is the first show that we've come to an end where I can actually play the new outro. So let's go ahead and do that. All right. Talk to everybody next week.
All right. See you guys. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?